Nuketown Radioactive for Monday, October 3rd, 2005.
I say we take off and nuke the entire site from orbit. It's the only way to be sure.
Well, folks, welcome to Radioactive number 17. I'm your host, Ken Newquist, and this will be the third podcast that's actually come out under the new weekly schedule. So far, I'm liking it. It's really letting me address more things and talk about more things and just generally, keep the whole ball rolling thing. Although it almost didn't happen this weekend. I spent a good chunk of my weekend, like almost all the daylight hours, doing nothing but repainting the porches on my house, the front porch and the back porch. Sue, my wife, organized this kind of work weekend for us. So we sent Jordan away to my in-law's house, and they watched her Saturday and Sunday, and we painted and painted. And painted some more. Of course, it wasn't all painting. There was some scraping involved too, and some washing down of walls and such. But for the most part, it was really just painting. But fortunately, I was able to take a break on Saturday night and go and watch Serenity with a whole group of my gaming guys. So that was pretty cool. Though, but more on that later. The other cool thing about actually painting, which, you know, it's a side benefit that you don't necessarily realize when you're in the middle of, when you're thinking about actually having to do it. But, you know, I've been kind of lamenting the fact that I haven't had time to listen to podcasts. Well, let me tell you, folks, when you're doing nothing but painting for, 8, 12 hours, you got plenty of time to listen to podcasts. So I'm now almost officially caught up on all of my podcasts. There's one or two that came out this weekend that I will need to listen to, but I blew through about a month's worth of podcasts painting the back porch. So that was pretty cool. Now, in some site news, I have two things I want to talk about. First, I mentioned a theme song in the last podcast. I'm still searching for music to use. That's kind of a lie, because I haven't even really started yet. Yeah, but I might have something next week. I did start listening to some music podcasts, though, specifically Rock and Roll Geek Indie Podcast, which has a lot of good rock gleaned both from the net and from music.podshow.com. So I'm hoping that by listening to that, maybe listening to a couple of other shows, just randomly checking some stuff out from the PodSafe Music Network, I might be able to find something that I could use with Nuketown, or find a couple of different things I could use with Nuketown. But we'll see how it goes. If anyone has suggestions, I'd love to hear them. Send them to nuketown@gmail.com. The other thing I wanted to mention was, just because it's come to my attention through the forums that people don't actually know about it, is Radiations, which is Nuketown's newsletter. You can find it at www.nuketown.com/radiations. Of course, the link will be in the show note. And basically, Radiations was and is Nuketown's email newsletter. I send it out way too infrequently, or I had been sending it out way too infrequently, but I am trying to gear up and trying to promote it a little bit more. I think it's a good tool for keeping people in touch with the site, and just with what's going on. I'm switching to a weekly schedule, so I'm planning on having it going out on Mondays, probably around Monday night. There is a little bit of effort that goes into to putting together the newsletter, so my hope is that the podcast will be recorded either Sunday or Monday, and then the newsletter can go out and remind everyone that it's up on the site. And of course, it has a roundup of everything else that's been on the site, so any reviews that I've written, all the netheads, new links, that kind of stuff, all ends up being in the newsletter. So I think it's pretty cool. I will admit I have fallen down on the job and not promoted it enough and not really used it enough, but that is all changing, folks. So please, go ahead and check it out.
This is exactly what I didn't want. I wanted simple. I wanted in and out. I wanted easy money.
Things always get a little more complicated, don't they, sir?
Just once, I'd like things to go according to the grand plan.
So my grand plan on Saturday was to go see Serenity, and man, I actually was able to go and do it, which was so cool. I am so grateful to my wife for letting me go and see Serenity while she continued to paint the front porch, which I gotta say, looks looks just freaking awesome. I think, I may just have to take a little picture of it tomorrow morning and post it along with the show notes so you guys can see exactly how hard we worked all weekend. But anyway, I did get to see Serenity. I'm not going to go into it in depth right now because I'm still just kind of basking in the afterglow, but it was good. It was really good. It was easily, I'd give it 9 out of 10. It was totally faithful to the series. I think it did, with one or two exceptions, everything that fans had hoped for. And more than that, I think that this movie is actually a really good launching off point for people to get into the whole Firefly / Serenity timeline. Now, I'm not even going to start to rehash what Serenity is, because at this point, you guys have got to know. And if you don't, just do a freaking search on the web. But basically, I thought this was a really good movie. I think this may be one of the best science fiction movies I've seen since The Matrix, which is saying something. I loved the... There have been a couple of films that have come out since then that I've enjoyed, but, you know, this is just the great dialogue, really good special effects, great setting, awesome characterization. I mean, this is really, honestly, everything we want to see in sci-fi. This is everything we lament does not exist in Star Trek and Star Wars. And, you know, I think it was awesome. I think that everyone should do themselves a favor and to do science fiction, the science fiction world a favor, and watch this movie. I just saw the box office results from over the weekend. I was really hoping that Firefly, we are not allowed to call it Firefly, are we? Serenity would come out on top, and I guess it made something like $10 million or something like that over the weekend. And it came in number 2 to the new Jodie Foster flick, which looks to be just a remake of Panic Room in the Air, but whatever. The point is that this was a good movie, and I'd like to see it really succeed. I'd love to see Universal rewarded for having the balls to pick up where Fox so disastrously left off by canceling this series. And I think, this is the kind of science fiction we want. So if you don't want just another Star Trek or Star Wars rehash, go and see this movie. If you haven't seen Firefly, I do recommend watching the series first, because, you know, I think the movie has more emotional impact if you've seen the series. But that having been said, you know what? I think that Joss does an awesome job of introducing people to this universe and getting people up and running in like 5-10 minutes of exposition. Really, you don't have to have seen the series to enjoy this movie. You may kick yourself if you see the movie and then go back and watch the series, but, you know, it's certainly not mandatory. So please, folks, you know, as fans, we kind of screwed up when Firefly was on the air, and we didn't watch it. At least I know I didn't. I know a bunch of other people didn't. And, you know, I think we all regret it. And actually, I've got an essay up on Nuketown right now called Why We're Obsessed with Firefly, which goes into this in more detail. But, you know, this is our chance to make up for screwing up before. So, everyone, go watch Serenity.
This show is part of the Out of This World Entertainment on the Sci-Fi Podcast Network, tsfpn.com.
I did mention earlier in the podcast that I was able to get caught up on my podcast this weekend by painting my porch and listening to my cool new iPod Shuffle, which I gotta say is pretty darn nifty. It fits perfectly into that stupid pocket in your jeans that has no real use, you know, the little one that's on your right hip. Never actually had any reason to use that before, but now I do. The iPod Shuffle just fits perfectly into that pocket, and it was right out of the way while I was doing all this painting, scraping, running around, whatever. But enough about the Shuffle. I'll probably post more about that on Nuketown if you really want a good review of the Shuffle. Anyway, the important thing is, at least within the terms of this podcast, that I was able to finally get caught up on all my podcasts, which was very cool. And I want to talk about two in particular. The first is PulpGamer.com. This is a podcast... please wait as my train of thought derails. Anyway, Pulp Gamer is a paper game podcast that talks about role-playing games, board games, card games, and pretty much anything else that can that involves like pen and paper, paper and cardboard, whatever. The whole point is that it doesn't involve a computer or a console or whatever. Recent reviews on the show have included Call of Cthulhu, the role-playing game, Monsters Menace America, which is a board game that was recently published by Wizards of the Coast, Settlers of Catan, which is just a classic board game, perhaps one of the one of the best board games ever made, in my humble opinion. Management Material, which is a new card game in which you try to avoid becoming the aforementioned management material by trying to force your coworkers to complete all your projects. And finally, Munchkin, which is just Steve Jackson Games' classic backstabbing card game. I like the podcast. I like the mix of games that they've got going, of the stuff that they're reviewing, the stuff that they talk about. They're all the sorts of games that my group and I like to play. And as a result, you know, I think it's a pretty cool podcast. You can check it out at www.pulpgamer.com. Now, the other podcast I want to talk about is actually, I'll cheat a little bit, is one I talked about previously, but I wanted to go back and talk about them again because I've actually had a chance to listen to the podcast. And the name of that podcast is Dice Make Bonk. The web address is hideously long. It's not that hideously long, but it's www.noirchickenstudios.com/dice_make_bonk. If that's too complicated for you, don't worry, it's in the show notes. I listened to a bunch of their podcasts over the last week or so, and I think I listened to the last one probably sometime today. It's all kind of a blur. But what I really enjoyed it. It's sort of a roundtable discussion about in and out of game issues, though mostly in game, or metagaming type issues, issues that involve the game from the perspective of the players. And this was a good example. For example, when confronted with an in-game puzzle, who should be attempting to solve it? The brilliant characters with their 18 and 19 intelligences, or the not-so-brilliant players? I mean, why is the puzzle there? Is it put there to challenge the players, or is it put there to challenge the characters? Because the characters, well, they're the aforementioned brilliant spellcasters. They should, in theory, right, be able to solve these without any great difficulty, because they are brilliant. Players, well, you know, I mean, let's be honest, guys. We're not really as brilliant as we might like to be. And sometimes we can be downright dense. So how do you deal with that? How do you you know, how do you come to terms with it? Do you say, no, the players must solve it because it's a problem there for them? Do you say, okay, well, the characters solve it, and you resolve it with just a simple dice roll and a skill check? Or do you do some sort of a hybrid? Personally, I tend towards the hybrid. I like throwing out the challenge for my players, and then if they get stuck, you know, give them the skill check or the int check or whatever. But anyway, those are the kind of things that they're talking about. Which, as a gamer, as a player, and as a dungeon master, I certainly enjoy those conversations, and I enjoy hearing other people's perspectives on those kind of topics. The other thing that I like is the length. It's about 20 to 25 minutes long, which means I can generally listen to one in a day's worth of commuting, particularly if I run home for lunch. And that's pretty cool for me, because right now, you know, I don't have a lot of time to listen to podcasts, so it's great to be able to knock one out pretty quickly like this. So all in all, good stuff. Definitely worth a listen. I wholeheartedly recommend checking this out and checking out Pulp Gamer while you're at it. Now, this week, I wanted to get back to the book reviews. And you know what? If I were actually had my act together, by this point, I would have a cool little bumper that would play just before I got into a book review, so you would all know, hey, there's a book review coming up. But alas, you're just gonna have to rely on me telling you, hey, here's a book review. So this week, I want to talk about The Chronicles of Amber by Roger Zelazny, which is just one of my all-time favorite fantasy novels. It was reprinted a couple of years ago under the name of The Great Book of Amber, which collects the first series, Chronicles of Amber 1 through 5, with the second series, Chronicles of Amber 6 through 10. That particular book is published by EOS. It is a really hefty tome, because obviously it's combining 10 books into one for 12... I think it's got 1,264 pages, according to my notes here. It is not quite as complete as you might like, although it does gather all 10 of the novels together. It, kind of conspicuously to me, does not include all the Amber short stories, and I think there's like four or five of them out there, which was a disappointment for me, because I found one of them from Amberzine, which was a fanzine that got published for a couple of years, well, more than a couple, for a long, many years. So I did get one through there, but I haven't been able to track the others down, and that's always been a disappointment for me, and I was really hoping that this book would include them, but they didn't. But I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. I first learned about Amber when I was in college at Lock Haven University, when my roommate, Vince Hendricks, hi Vince, I know the chances are that you're listening to this are very slim, but if you are, hey. Anyway, Vince lent me the books, and I read through them in a blur. And I got to tell you, you know, at the time, it didn't make a huge impression on me, mostly because I think I was just... I don't know what it was. You know, I think it was mostly college. You know, when you're in your late teens, early 20s, and you're just kind of, well, I guess at that point I was probably around 19, you know, and trying to juggle all that stuff and reading, you know, it's just that first year at Lock Haven's kind of a blur. And not, I should say, because of alcohol, because I very rarely drank my first year at college, but mostly just because, you know, it was so cool to meet all these people and to do all these things. So anyway, a couple years later, I ended up picking up the books again as audiobooks from the library, and I was just totally excited to have seen them there, because I vaguely remembered reading the books, and I vaguely remember what the plots were. But I tell you the truth, I sat down and I'm listening to these books during my commute, and man, I just totally fell in love with them. I fell in love with the language, I fell in love with the characters, I fell in love with just everything about them. So let's talk about what the books are about. The Chronicles of Amber tell the story, or at least the first five books, tell the story of Corey. And as asthmatic, somebody with amnesia, you know, I'm not really all that great at the whole pronunciation thing, which really makes a podcast very amusing. But anyway, Corey wakes up in a private hospital and finds himself swathed in blankets, his leg in a cast, and nurses doping him way too often. He has no idea who he is or how he ended up in this hospital bed, but he quickly determines that whomever he is, he's exceptional, and he's just not going to take getting locked up. After finding and then extorting the director of the facility, and also breaking the cast off of his leg and realizing that, whoa, if the statistics that were given him were accurate, he should never have been able to heal this quickly. Anyway, he finds the director. He basically threatens him with all sorts of different things, including a little bit of violence and a lot of exposure for, you know, basically keeping him doped in a private hospital. He learns that his sister is responsible for paying the bills, so he decides to go pay her a visit. When he finds her, some of his old memories start to return, and he realizes that he's part of a large, dysfunctional, and possibly quite lethal family. He also finds certain artifacts, in particular, a deck of tarot-like cards that indicate that his family and him are not of this world, and possibly not even of this reality. Ultimately, we learn that Corey, well, his name is actually Corwin, and he's one of nine princes in Amber, thus the name of the first book in the series, sons of a missing king who constantly schemed to rule the one true city, Amber. You see, you may think that you live in the real world, but in truth, Amber is the only one reality, the only real reality. What we are is a mere shadow. Our entire plane of existence is just a shadowy reflection of the true city of Amber, the true reality of Amber. And the cool thing, this is why I love this whole backstory. By walking a magical pattern that's etched in a dungeon below Castle Amber, princes and princesses of the blood are able to travel through all these shadows by will alone, going to any reality they can possibly imagine. The book involves near countless schemes between the royal family members of Amber, and follows Corwin's quest to wrest the crown from his hated brother, Eric. The books... And the battles, I'm sorry, I get so excited about this book, because it was just such a great freaking read. It is, you could call it heroic fantasy, except for the fact that Corwin really isn't all that great of a hero. At least if your definition of heroes involves altruistic, self-sacrificing individuals, which I gotta say, you know, isn't always my definition of heroic. But anyway, he's got great scenes where Corwin and his brother, is one of his other brothers, decide that they're going to... lay siege to Amber. They're going to invade. And they conjure all these armies up out of shadow. They travel through these different planes of existence. Because one of the cool things about Amber, or about this reality, is that Corwin and any of his brothers and sisters can find anything they want in shadow. They just have to imagine it and then travel through shadow to that place where suddenly their dreams have become real. So Corwin and his brother, in this example, need armies. So they travel through reality and all these shadows until they finally find a place where part of the mythology is that two brothers will arrive to gather up these holy warriors to go and overthrow the evil god. And you know, that's just freaking awesome. I mean, it's a totally different take on fantasy. I mean, yes, it's fantasy, and yes, it has its magical elements, but man, the mechanics are just totally unlike anything that you may have read before. Well, at least in my experience. So anyway, Corwin and his brother are they finally get to they're right at the foothills of Amber, and they have to fight up this huge flight of stairs leading up the mountain called, I think it's called Corvair, going to Amber itself, to the city. And the way that Zelazny describes this battle is just great, where he was talking about you know, this great epic battle where you've got these two basically superhuman people fighting off thousands upon thousands of soldiers. You know, great, just truly great epic stuff, right? And then, you know, the siege doesn't go all that well, and the invasion kind of doesn't go all that well, and bad things happen to Corwin. And just, you know, it's just a great read. It's one of those things that's a dangerous book for me, because if I pick it up, I'm not going to be able to do anything else other than read through the first five books of The Chronicles of Amber. It was one of those things where I was re-listening to it while I was in the car. I didn't want to get out. You know, I would drive to work, you know, I'd spend an hour, hour and a half in traffic, and I did not want to get out of the car because it was just that good. Now, the conflicts are great. The imagery is great. Zelazny, I think, in my humble opinion, is at his best when he's writing in Amber, or at least in these first five books. What really makes it is the dialogue, and I love the dialogue so much so that I have three nearly threadbare shirts with quotes on the books from them that I got at Gen Con a couple years ago, and I really need to get some new ones. But anyway, here's some examples of quotes that just illustrate just what I love about this series. Here's one from Julian de Corwin from The Sign of the Unicorn, which is one of the books in this series. Quote is, "We spend so much time lying to one another, I decided it might be amusing to say what I really felt." And that's a great line, especially if you know Julian. You know, he's just got this like sullen, pithy little response to Corwin, and it's just, it was great. Then you've got Bran de Corwin in Sign of the Unicorn, where he says, "My present motives are almost entirely altruistic," which is just great, because, you know, whenever anybody is proclaiming the fact that they're being altruistic, you know, you always kind of look behind the curtain, because inevitably they're hell-bent on world domination, which in this particular case, you know, may be true. The last great quote was, "I am the soul of honor, kindness, mercy, and goodness. Trust me in all things," which is what Corwin says to Dara in The Guns of Avalon. And I think that's probably one of my favorite quotes, because Corwin is just being completely tongue-in-cheek. You know, Dara is kind of like his distant niece kind of thing. He hasn't actually figured out his relationship to her, I think, at that point. And, you know, he's saying, you know, you can't trust anybody in the family. And she says, "Not even you?" He says, "Oh, no, no, you can trust me. I am the soul of honor, kindness, mercy, and goodness. Trust me in all things." That is just a great freaking line. And what makes it all the more better is that I'm walking around with this geek shirt on, right? And I go into, I think it was Target or something, and this elderly woman comes out, and she's walking out of the store as I'm walking in, and she sees my shirt, and she smiles, and she reads it, and she says, "Ah, you know, what a lovely sentiment." Like, I just had to laugh, because, you know, I just smile and says, "Yeah, well, yes, thank you very much." But, you know, inwardly, I'm just cackling maniacally, because I know the context of the quote. I know what Corwin's like. I know what this series is like. And I just, well, what can I say? I love these books. I wholeheartedly recommend picking it up. Now, I gotta say, there was another series that was, the first Chronicles of Amber was released, I think, in the early 80s. I'm not 100% sure on the exact timeline for it. I think the last book was probably released somewhere around like 84, 85. And the second series came out in, I think it culminated around 1991, something like that. The second series involves Corwin's son, Merwin. And I liked the first three books or so. It's really amusing, because you don't know, in this book, you don't know what's happened to Corwin. And I think that's part of the disappointment for me, is that I really wanted to see more of Corwin, because you got so attached to him in the first series. Anyway, so you start to you know, get an appreciation for Merwin. And I really liked how one of the setups is that on his birthday, every year, I think it's on his birthday, someone tries to kill him. And that was a great storyline. You know, that was a great little plot device, that every single year, here's a character who is going to get killed, or is going to, somebody's going to attempt to try and kill him, which I thought was, you know, It was pretty cool. I mean, I'd love to have something like that in my D&D campaign, you know. But the unfortunately, you know, it just... Well, I liked the first couple of books in the series. It just kind of unraveled as it went on. It just kind of rambled. It wasn't... It just wasn't as good as the first five books. There's just, you know, it's something I can't quite put my finger on, but I just didn't enjoy it as much as I did the original series. But, you know, I think, I still think it's worth reading. Definitely, wholeheartedly recommend the first five books. Definitely recommend picking up Chronicles of, or the Great Book of Amber, even if it isn't quite as great as I might like it to have. And, again, I think this is an awesome series. So, I think I'll give it 10 out of 10. As far as I'm concerned, Chronicles of Amber, books 1 through 5, should be on everyone's reading list. It should be on everyone's bookshelf. It is really that good. Well, folks, that'll about do it for now. I'm always looking for feedback on the podcast, so if you have some feedback, you got a bunch of ways that you can get it to me. First of all, we've got the forums that are online. You can check out Nuketown's own forums at www.nuketown.com/forum, or you can check out our forums on the Science Fiction Podcast Network, which is at tsfpn.com. I'll include a link directly to both of those forums in the show notes. You can get to me at email at nuketown@gmail.com. You can Skype me. My username's Nuketown. And finally, you can get to me at AOL Instant Messenger /iChat at knuquist@mac.com. I love getting feedback, hate working in a vacuum. So, if you've got comments, folks, please send them on in. But that's about it for now. So I'll talk to you later.